to the Connect Kindness podcast, where we connect people with organizations to inspire kindness. I'm your host, Crystal Aziz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tim Evans. In today's episode, we interview Aviram Rosen, who is the founder and director of Sadhana Forest, which is a volunteer-based organization focused on creating long-term food security and environmental restoration. Sadhana Forest hosts and trains over 1,500 volunteers, students, and interns annually from 50 different countries.
In this interview, Aviram shares why he started Sadhana Forest and how it was originally meant to be a home for him and his family, but grew into a movement. We learn about how Sadhana Forest grew from a single volunteer into three locations in three different countries. Sadhana Forest is not only an environmental restoration organization, but Aviram has created an organization centered around helping people be the best version of themselves through veganism and selflessness. So without further ado, this is our interview with Aviram Rosen of Sadhana Forest.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Connect Kindness podcast. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about Sadhana Forest and why it was founded?
Yes, so Sadhana Forest is a reforestation project that started in 2003 in South India in an international town called Oroville. And it was started as our home, the home of my family, my wife, my daughter, who was 3 years old at the time, and myself, with the intention of planting the tropical dry evergreen forest, the indigenous forest of our area. Since then, we've been developing it and growing it much beyond that.
Awesome. That's amazing. Okay, so let's take it back a little bit. Before Sadhana Forest, what was life like? You said your daughter was only 3 whenever you first created it. So where were you guys living before? What were you doing before?
We were living in Israel, working as professionals, my wife in the architecture field, myself in the management field as a CEO of the company. Yeah, living a normal life, so to speak.
So what made you want to, you know, give that all up and move into a forest? What changed? What was the changing factor?
I think that we looked for some deeper meaning rather than, working, earning, spending. It was all good, but it was not really deeply satisfying. And we looked for something that would really be much more meaningful for us. It was an inner yearning for something deeper, and that search led us to East Asia, to eventually to India, and India was a love at first sight for us, and we just felt, oh, this is where we want to live. Yeah, and from then started many other changes, like starting to being vegetarian and then becoming vegan and then starting to meditate and starting to introspect more about the impact of our life also ecologically and about our children's education and many other things.
So what inspired you to want to create such a unique place like Sadhana Forest?
I would say that, we wanted to create a home for ourselves. We never imagined that this would become an international organization working in 3 countries. If somebody would have told me this 15 years ago, I would think that, they really, need help. It was just a home for us. And the main driver to start that home was not wanting to compromise anymore. Just wanting to live our life exactly as we see fit. And it was so difficult to do it in the outside world because everywhere that where you join a group of people, so maybe veganism doesn't work with them and maybe unschooling and maybe gift economy or any other of our, compassion-driven ideas were not in total tune with them. In Sadhana Forest, we could make the, we could create the ethos. We could make the rules. So it was a perfect place for us to live as a family. But we never imagined that so many people would want to join that. And, volunteers started coming and saying, oh, we want to work with you. We want to live here. And we said, okay, fine. and more and more of them. And now we are hosting over 1,000 volunteers a year in India alone, residential volunteers, a few more hundred in Haiti and in Kenya. So it really, you know, grew up very much. People told us before we started Sadhana Forest in India, people told us, oh, a place, you know, a vegan place with no drugs and no alcohol and no cigarettes. I mean, who would come to be with you?
Sure.
You know, you would have 10, 15 people a year joining you. And we said, okay, fine, we'll live alone. It's not a problem. but, you know, people are looking for much more than having fun. They're looking for a change. They're looking for their inner purpose, and more of them are. So I think that places like this that actually are a bit challenging and a bit, you could say, radical in some way, are becoming very, very attractive. Yeah, people, you know, young people see their parents that are working in jobs that they don't really like so much, that are, you know, not being very healthy physically or emotionally, and they're saying, do I want to end up like this? Or do I want to make a change now? And when somebody offers them a way that they could experience something else, even for just a few weeks, they go for it.
Yeah, I mean, just to recap, you were a CEO of a company, your wife was an architect. In the world's eyes, that's super successful, you know, and from what it sounds like, you know, you were at a point where, you know, you hit your goals, but it wasn't enough. So a lot of people are really searching for that monetary fulfillment, you know, but once they get there, maybe it's not as fulfilling. What advice would you give to those people that, you know, maybe they don't have the ability to start a Sadhana Forest, but they're really searching for something extra? What do you have any advice that you could give to them?
You know, my daughter, when she was very small, she always used to repeat the sentence, sharing is caring, you know? And the more, and it's a great thing, you know? The more you earn, the more you have the ability to satisfy your own needs, but also the more you have the ability to share and care for others. And I think that the high earners among us are the ones who can really make a change. And some of them do, but many don't. And I think that using the power of money to give to your community, to give to others, to care for animals, to, you know, it's wonderful. And it changes your quality of life. And I think that this is the real quality of life. Quality of life, in my experience, is not measured by the number of square feet that you live on, or the number or the quality of the cars that you own, but more by the quality of a community feeling, of sharing feeling, of love that you experience with the people around you, with your own family, and with others around you. So, yeah, this is the kind of quality of life that I think we were looking for.
Absolutely. Avram, you are an amazing human being. Yeah.
You really are. And it's crazy that you said that, like the people that are earning the most money have the most power to like really impact people. Because Tim and I actually heard about a story yesterday with a billionaire. His name is, he's a tech investor. His name is Robert Smith. And he actually was given a commencement speech at Morehouse College. And there was about 400 students in that graduating class, and in the speech he said, I'm going to pay off everybody's debt, like college debt. You know, he's making God knows how much money, and that was his way of saying, I'm going to impact these people, and all I'm asking is you pass it forward. You help the next person next to you, or, you know, whatever you can do to make sure that it's possible for other people to have great opportunities. And I think that's exactly what you're doing in your case, and I think that's really relatable to today's world and what people can see on the news, you know, and it's amazing what you're doing, so it's pretty awesome.
I just wanted to share another story. related to the Robert Smith story, which is very inspiring. You know, when I started Sadhana Forest, I invested all my own money. Everything that I earned in my life was spent in Sadhana Forest. And it's not my land. The land belongs to the Orville Foundation, of which I'm a part. And there was a lady that lives not far from us that came and asked me, when will you get this money back? What's the return on investment here? How would you recuperate that money? And I said, I'll never get it back. And it was so hard for her to accept that she turned around and walked out of the gate of Sadhana Forest and never came in again.
Really?
Wow.
Because she was just all her life, you know, all what she understands in life as meaningful was just crushed at that moment. So she said, okay, if there's no ROI, this is not interesting for me. I'm going to somebody sane, you know?
Yeah.
It's really difficult for people to understand the concept of giving. And they understand it better when it's somebody who's a billionaire and sort of has enough for themselves, for their own future.
Mm-hmm.
They understand it more easily, but I'm not a billionaire and I gave everything that I have and I have nothing left. So it's only my trust and my love and my, you know, my conviction, but nothing material. And people find it very, very difficult to understand that.
And how do you explain it to them whenever they seem confused when you say that, or they ask you questions like, why would you do that? Or why would you do that? Like, well, how do you explain that to them?
I have two answers, the short one and the long one. the short one is I'm crazy. And they say, yeah, you're right. and the long one is really what I, you know, how we started this conversation. It's about really what is meaningful and what is security? When do we feel secure? Is security something that we have in a bank or in an insurance company, or is it something we have internally, or is it something that we have in the relationship between each other? You know, I had a conversation with a lady that in Germany that I know, but I don't know her too well. She has been in Sadhana Forest before, and I was visiting Germany to give a lecture, so I was sitting and having lunch with her. And she asked me, so how is your pension plan? What would you do, you know, 20 years from now? And I said, I don't have a pension plan. I hope I'll be fine. I don't know. And she said, you know, I will give you a pension.
Wow.
If you ever need, call me and I'll send you something monthly that will be enough for you to live in India.
Wow.
And she just said it spontaneously, you know, and I said, this is so sweet of you. I hope I'll never need it. I'll never need to make that call. But knowing that you're there and you're willing to do that, that's so amazing. Yeah, I have different pension plans.
The future is set. If something happens, you'll be good. You'll be good.
That's amazing. I just kind of want to go back to you know, when you created Sadhana Forest. So you were saying people started to come. What was the process? Like, how long did it take people to notice and then really for that vision to take shape?
You wouldn't believe it, but the first volunteer came after 5 days.
How did they hear about
into
it?
The project, it was, we started on the 19th of December 2003. On the 24th came the first volunteer and said, I want to stay with you. And we didn't have a place for him to stay because we were not intending to receive volunteers, and especially not so soon. Mm-hmm. So there was a little gap between the roof and the inner roof and the outer roof of our storeroom, our tool shed, so he slept in that gap. and he was super happy, and then he told many other people about this, and they started coming. I think by the end of January 2004, we had probably between 25 and 30 people volunteering with us. And they were sleeping under tarpaulins and, you know, in makeshift stuff because we didn't have any accommodation for them. But they were so happy. And many of them are still in touch with us and are, you know, and the community just started forming, and, you know, the procedures, the ways of working just evolved organically.
What do you think were the driving factors for people who, you know, just came to volunteer, but then, like you said, some of them are still with you and they actually ended up living at Susquehanna Forest?
Yeah, I mean, none of the ones that came are with us physically. Many of them are in touch with us. None of them are, actually, our two employees are still working with us for the last almost 16 years. But the volunteers, they have left, but they're in touch with us, and we have volunteers that are now 6 or 7 years with us, or even 8 years. So, the question was why they were...
Exactly. Like, what do you think it is about Susquehanna Forest, even 7 or 8 years? I mean, that's a lot of time, you know? So do you think, you know, pulled them to Susquehanna Forest?
I think the answer would be a little bit different for each one of them, but I think there are a few common things. One thing is the fact that in Susquehanna Forest you are accepted as you are, and you know, nobody asks you for a certificate, a diploma, you know, how much money you have, all these things. You know, you're just accepted as what you are, and you can contribute whatever you're able and you want to contribute. There are people, for instance, that come with a profession, but they don't want to work in that profession anymore, and they say, okay, we really need your professional experience, but if you don't want to do that anymore, do something else, you know? Mm-hmm. We try to give people the space to recreate themselves, to reinvent themselves professionally and emotionally. And I think that the fact that there's a lot of scope for creativity in Susquehanna Forest, you can really do things in so many different ways, is very good for people who are creative and maybe don't fit so well in the smaller boxes that are in the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the family atmosphere is very different from a company. I mean, you know, we treat our volunteers really like family, and if they have any problem, they can always come to our hut and talk or cry or you know, and we can do the same. I mean, we're really trying to support each other. So, yeah, I think there are many, many reasons. And also, even the you know, living in a place like Samburu in Kenya and being in touch with this wonderful, amazing tribe of how many people have the possibility to go into a place that already exists in a very remote and tribal area, mm-hmm. and just live with the people. It's an amazing opportunity that it's really difficult to create for yourself. So if somebody has already created it, it's a great chance.
Absolutely. Just curious, what does a typical day at Susquehanna Forest look like? If you could share with our listeners.
A typical day would be waking up at 5:30. Maybe some of our listeners will disconnect the podcast right now. and then at 6, we start our first seva. Seva is selfless service. So our first selfless service is in the forest. And then it's until 8:30 and then or 9, and then we have breakfast. And then the second seva is mostly working with local children or with inside the community, cooking lunch or doing different maintenance work. and then lunch. And after lunch, we're mostly free to do whatever we want. So the long-term volunteers, those that stay with us for over a year, they're working very long days, like me and my wife. But the short-term volunteers have a much more relaxed schedule.
And I think that's what gives them the opportunity to grow, like you're saying, or manifest into what they came there for and what they were seeking. And giving them that opportunity, I think, is great and makes this whole thing unique in what you're doing. And I think that's why people love it, because when you started this, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram was not, you know, the way to, you know, share your organization or anything like that. So I think the power within your nonprofit is the word of mouth, people going, experiencing it, and then coming back and telling their friends and their family, like, hey, you need to go check out this place. You need to go live with these people, because I've learned so much, and I think it's something that everyone needs to experience. I think that's where your success has grown with being in the organization. And with that being said, you have three locations. You have Haiti, you have Kenya, and you have India. What made you want to grow to those other areas instead of just continuing to just grow India as much as you could?
Yeah, I just, for that, if you don't mind, I wanted to say something about the social media, that even now with all the social media, the word of mouth is so powerful. Of course, it uses social media technically. I mean, people spread the word on Facebook. They don't do that, you know, on the phone, but it's word of mouth nonetheless. And the power of the place is the power of how you feel when you're there, and that's what you communicate. Regarding the expansion to Haiti and Kenya, Haiti came because a friend of mine, Dr. Steve Whitman from New Hampshire, said, why don't you start the Sadhana Forest in Haiti? This was after the earthquake in 2010. And we said, okay, that's interesting. Where is Haiti? So we started checking on Google Maps. Where exactly it is, and, you know, realizing the distance and the challenge of starting a project so far from India. You know, I called all my volunteers at that time, all my long-term volunteers, and I told them, would you like to go and start another Sadhana Forest in Haiti? And their reaction was with the fist of the hand, like, yes.
Like, excitement.
All of them did the same movement, yes. And we said, okay, this is the energy that can lead us to Haiti. You know, with this yes, I feel we'll reach there. And miracle after miracle happened to get us there, because we didn't have the money to travel from India to Haiti. We didn't know anyone in Haiti, and just a chain of miracles that is unbelievable, or coincidences, if you want to call them, you know, led us to start a project. And now, 9 years later, we started on the 8th of April, 2010. We are more than 9 years later, and the project is still active and growing and gaining momentum, and yeah, we're so happy.
That's amazing. That's inspiring.
That is, yeah. I believe that, you know, if you're doing the right thing, it will work out, right? And it's clear that you guys are going in the right direction. Like you said, miracle after miracle. That's awesome.
I'll tell you a funny moment about that. There was a moment that we didn't have money to run the project anymore in Haiti. It was about 1 year after we started. You know, the enthusiasm after the earthquake has worn down, and nobody wanted to donate anymore. And, you know, and how do you continue this? And then I tell my wife, we were in India, and I tell her, you know, we have to close the project and bring Nick back. Nick was our project director at the time. And she looked at me and she says, we can't do that. And I said, why? She said, we don't have the money to fly Nick back.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. My God.
So Nick stayed, I guess.
So I called a friend. I called a friend in New York and asked him, hey, can you send my guy in Haiti $300 so that he could eat and just continue, you know, planting trees there for another month or two before we realize how to fly him back? And, you know, and but then we got a donation and we carried on. And so it all worked out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is. I know you mentioned this earlier, but for our listeners that maybe didn't hear it, how many people volunteer at Sat Hanna Forest annually? And then in addition, what volunteer goal would take Sat Hanna Forest to the next level?
So the numbers are, we had last year a little bit more than 1,000 volunteers in India, residential volunteers in India, I think 1,060. And about 500 additionals in Haiti and in Kenya together, so okay. About 1,500 annually. I mean, if we the main restricting factor in Sadhana Forest at the moment is the number of long-term volunteers, people that are committed for over a year, and the financial side. So I would say that if we had another 10 or 15 people that are willing to stay with us over a year, it would be a game changer for us. But having said that, in order to reach this number, we have to, that's in addition to the, let's say, 25 that we have at the moment, long-term volunteers internationally. So in order to reach there, we have to have a lot of short-term volunteers, because how will people decide to stay with us? They need to, so, you know, we need many more hundreds of volunteers to come through, and some of them would say, okay, I'm in, and then would become long-term volunteers, and that would make the very, very big difference.
That's great. On average, how long do you say, or would you say that volunteers stay at Sat Hanna Forest?
About the average is about a month and a half.
That's pretty good.
That's really good.
Yeah, but there are people that stay shorter. There are people that stay, you know, for 2 weeks or 1 month, and there are people that stay much, much longer. There are many people that, you know, until now, we had one volunteer that stayed for 9 years. His name was Jamie. He's Jamie. And when Jamie came to volunteer with us, he argued with me that he wants to stay for 10 days, and the minimum stay was 14 days. So I said, it's 14 days or nothing. And he said, 10 days. And I said, 14 days. And then, he stayed for 9 years.
So I think you won the battle there.
Yeah,
yeah. I think pretty big time.
So with the minimum 2 weeks, why did you choose to 2 weeks? And you know, why were you steadfast on having it minimum 2 weeks?
So the minimum is 2 weeks, in India, the minimum is 2 weeks out of the season. So from April to December, and it's 1 month, December, January, February, and March. The reason is, that, we are in a very, touristy place in India. If I would allow a minimum of 2 weeks in the season, let's say in January or in February, I would have at least 400 people staying, at least, at the time.
And what's your maximum number of people? What's the maximum?
My maximum is 195. So, yeah, so it's double, and you know, probably if there would be 400, the next year there will be 600, you know, because it's exponential. Once you have this kind of numbers with social media and everything, it, you know, it's spreading very fast. So we had to cap it at one point, or and instead of saying, okay, after a certain number of volunteers, we don't accept people anymore, we say, okay, you come for longer. And that way we screen the people without saying ever to anybody, you can't come. You know, in 15 years that we're running this organization, we have never said no to a single volunteer. Sorry, we don't have space for you.
That's what I'm talking about. That's awesome.
I mean, it's extremely challenging. I mean, we have we have gone through a lot of hardship, you know, and still are going through a lot of hardship funding all this infrastructure, and you know, it's not easy at all. I'll give you an example from just right now. Our kitchen in India, our community kitchen, is already very, very old. The natural roof is practically falling apart there, you know, and we can't fund a new kitchen. So, you know, we have a lot of volunteers. We have to eat and feed everybody. And you know, if it would be a very small kitchen, it would be very cheap to replace it. But because it's quite large, because it has to feed so many people, it's much more challenging. So, yeah, everything about these numbers is challenging, but also extremely satisfying, of course.
Of course. How do people get involved with you guys? Say they wanted to come volunteer, or say they were able to help you build a new kitchen. How could they get in touch with you? How could they get involved with you?
The simplest way is either on Facebook, Sadhana Forest, SADHANAFOREST, and .org. And on our website, we're present on Instagram as well, on Twitter. So people can find us very easily, and on our website they can find all the information about what we're doing, and and they could also donate if they wanted to. Our preferred way of supporting is small monthly support. What we really like is what we call sustaining members, people that are giving, you know, a few dollars or euros a month, but on a very long term. So it enables us to plan and to, you know, use the economy of scale. And yeah, and of course, all the information about volunteering is on the website as well.
Just a last question here. Where do you see the future of Sadhana Forest? You know, you started off in India, and then you grew to Kenya as well as Haiti. What does the future look like?
You know, I have dreams and I wouldn't call them plans, but dreams. But I know that something else will happen, because that's always the story with Sadhana Forest. You have one dream and another dream manifest. So I wouldn't take what I say very seriously, but what I think now is, you know, we're thinking about three additional countries. And these are Namibia, Tajikistan, and Guatemala, because in those three countries we identified places where there is severe aridity and severe malnutrition and ownership of private land. People own very arid land around their homes that they don't use, and they can plant a food forest in them. And those places are safe for volunteers, so they satisfy all our criteria. And sort of that's the plan. But, you know, if something else happens, we'll be, you know, happy to do that. We'll see what the future brings.
I love it. I love your energy. I love all the stories that you've shared with us on this podcast. Tim and I were excited about it, and there's a reason why we were excited about this podcast. We actually took, I think, almost 2 months off with not doing any podcasts, so I think this is a really good one to bring it back in and
Absolutely.
Go full force with.
Yeah, and I woke up at 4:30 in the morning to come in early to interview you, and this is one of my favorites that we've done. And Avram, just thank you so much for, you know, what you're doing and the people that you're helping. The universe rewards that. So, you know, congratulations on the years that you've had and the many years that you will with Sadhana Forest.
Thank you very, very much. And thank you for waking up early in the morning and for giving me this wonderful chance to share the dream with others. And I hope that we'll get to share more in the future.
Thank you so much for listening to the Connect Kindness podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ShareGiveDo. And please remember, the world is changed by your example, not by your opinion.